Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
We're back after a brief hiatus.
Yep. We had an unexpected hiccup last week. We weren't able to podcast, but we have returned, and we will cover... all the things from last week.
It wasn't a hiccup. I was vomiting.
Nick is coughing right now.
Because, oh, no. Unexpected hiccup.
Sorry.
He swallowed something wrong and just needs a moment to slowly die. And then we will revive him and continue the podcast.
Yes, we did. We had to skip last week. There were a lot of games that came in, a fair amount of comics. And so we'll be covering 2 weeks worth of games and comics. And also, there were trailers from D23 and some other things that we didn't get a chance to talk about. So... this week is a big week of extra stuff.
So sit back, strap in,
tune in, turn on, drop out.
All right, 60s Randy is here.
All right, I'm gonna start running down games.
All right.
So the DC deck building game got two more. These are repackages of some previous stuff that's been out print for years now.
Is this the multiverse stuff?
No, it's actually they call them crossover classics. They used to be the little tiny packs.
Yep.
And they put like three of them into one big piece, so they got a bigger box. So one of them is the Crossover Classics, which is the first three, I think, releases they did, which is Justice Society, Green Arrow, based on the Arrow show, but with new comic book art instead of the pictures, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
And then the Legion of Superheroes.
Okay. Bye, Stephen Amell.
What's that?
Stephen Amell.
Yeah. and then they did the Crisis Classics, which are the last two of the Crisis, which are the ones that are making more of a cooperative game. And good stuff. If you're playing DC Deck Builder, you don't have these, I'd recommend them. I have all of it. And I played, in fact, Shazam versus Black Adam last night. Yeah. And I'm not going to say I'm pretty good at the game, but I did own my friend Steph. She was playing Black Adam, and I smacked her down with the power of Shazam.
Real cool.
Felt real cool.
She's like, how does this game work? And you're like, you're about to get owned.
No, she's an expert. She beats me every time.
Oh, okay.
So this was glory revenge.
Needed payback.
Yeah. However, I believe the truth is Black Adam's powers aren't as cool as Shazam's in this game.
Oh, interesting. Huh?
But anyway, the two-player versions are all super cool, and I recommend those, too.
Yeah, I've played a few of them, and I really like how they balance them and stuff.
We got a new Horrified. That is the cooperative game that's, like, monster-themed.
Yep.
This one is the fourth one. It's called World of Monsters. It takes place in sort of a town that has, like, a portal to an alternate world. And so, like, Cthulhu is in there. There's some other, like, international monsters.
Right. They're, like, characters or, like, monsters and stuff from, like, folklore of, like, India and things like that. It's not like a Rakshasa, but it'd be something like that.
And they call it an arcane punk town, which is a cool name.
Yeah, like, it looks like, it's almost like, you know, if the Hellmouth opened up in Buffy and, like, was, like, at full blast.
Yeah.
And, like, to the point where, like, the town was, like, almost isolated from the rest of the world, that kind of thing. And, like, and it looks like your heroes have, like, some steampunk tech and stuff in this to fight it. Because I saw some of the gear and stuff you have, and it looked like cool steampunk stuff, so... it definitely has a different vibe than the others.
Also,
and apparently it's, what, backwards compatible?
It's compatible with Greek Monsters, so you can use the monsters from the Greek Monsters one in there.
Yep.
We got the new Star Wars Villainous, Revenge at Last, which I know has Darth Maul in it. There might be another one in there. It might just be a one-off. I'm not sure. But if you want to play Darth Maul in the Villainous game series.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
We've got the D&D icons. They're pre-painted miniatures. We got the 50th anniversary minis, which are... these are the blind boxes.
They're based on original D&D Monster Manual art.
Right.
Not all of them. They're also mixed fifth editions.
They have first edition and fifth edition.
And first edition, you mean?
Yeah, first edition and fifth edition is what I said.
You said fifth edition and fifth edition.
No, I said first edition and fifth edition.
Let's rewind the tape.
We can't do that. I keep telling you.
That's all right. But
I know what I said.
I know that I'm right.
But you could get a first edition Vecna or a fifth edition Vecna if you want to be fancy.
Right.
There's the Eidolon from the first edition. You can get Strahd. Shadow Demons, Githyanki's.
You know, everybody knows that the art was kind of a little crude in some of those old D&D things, and I love it too, but it's a little crude. But these are not like, these are like really well-made versions of them, I have to say.
I think the Bugbear is particularly great.
Yeah, I always like that Bugbear, and there's like a standalone box that has the big red dragon from, was it not the DMG, or was it the DMG? I forget what was it, like some box art. But anyway, it's the iconic red dragon of old from before Larry Elmore's famous one. the previous iconic
back
Red
when
Dragon.
He slightly derpy, but
he did.
But still very cool.
Right. It will take you back to the 70s, yeah. No doubt. Music from Eric Clapton's Cream will start playing, and you know how it is.
We've got from last week a game called Pirates of Maracaibo, which I believe is a reprint of an older game.
Okay.
Always need more pirate board games.
Yeah, there's pirate games are good. Plays over three rounds. Once you sail the Caribbean, hire crew, ally with other ships, or explore the shore, amass the most treasure, and ideally become like the big pirate.
Yeah,
big pirate.
I guess so. It's a standalone game set in the same franchise as a game called Maracaibo, with a more accessible rule set. So yeah, sound like fun. We've got a game called Trail Story America. This is from WizKids, and it looks like a cool exploration game. Might include, it says, a hungry cougar, a lost lumberjack, an ancient burial ground, a foggy swamp. So it sounds like sort of Americana, supernatural, kind of like that that comic from Image.
Proof.
No.
Nope.
The one that was...
Manifest Destiny?
Manifest Destiny, that's it.
Okay.
That's where I was going. But it sounds kind of like that, looks cool. Harvest, which is a very cute farming game from Keymaster Games, the guys who make, I think, like Parks and some of those games.
Okay.
Metro Runner, which is a cyberpunk game from the people that do Role Player and some of those games.
Mm-hmm.
Dungeon Cart, which is a Mario Kart riff from the Boss Monster people.
Oh, yeah. It, like, straight looks like Mario Kart, but with, like, little demons, or, like, dragons and stuff driving cars.
It looks really fun.
The carts. It's delightful looking.
We also got in Return to Dark Tower, which we've had before, but it usually goes pretty fast.
Yeah, this is one of those big old games like Gloomhaven and stuff like that, but you probably do need it.
It has a cool tower that is Bluetooth enabled.
Yes.
Use an iPad to play it. It's got, like, storytelling. I've played this. It's a co-op game. The redesign, this is, like, an 80s game originally.
Yes, it was, like, very early 80s, but like 81 or something.
The redesign is from, like, the Pandemic guy. So it's, it's a really solid game. I've played this a bunch. It's
Does
really
the tower
good.
Itself still, even though it's app-based, like, light up? Do you put your phone in it or whatever?
Lights up, spins, you put little skulls in it.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. We got a big restock on Indie Press Revolution.
Oh, yeah, man, there is a lot of catch-up.
It's a lot of catch-up.
Yeah.
Included a bunch of new games, which I just looked through the post, Dave, that you made. A game called Wild Sea.
Yeah, Wild Sea is the one that's based on, like, Miyazaki's Nausicaa.
Oh, okay.
God, I'm wrong. I missed
No, that's the other.
That's the other one. but there is one based on that that's, like, so it's kind of like a fantasy future with, like, giant insects and stuff, which, as a Texan, as a Southerner, I was pleased to see. It's very specifically giant psychic cicadas. My worst fear.
We got a couple of anthologies, one called Seven Wonders, another one called Odd Jobs that is all, like, micro settings.
Yep.
Nine Lives to Valhalla, which I think is a solo game.
Yep, it's cats and Viking stuff.
Nice. A Cozy Den. Dave, do you remember what A Cozy Den is about?
Boy, let's put it at its very simplest. It's a game of lesbian snakes.
Yep, that's correct. That's right. we got a little thing called Making a Tabletop RPG for Your Particular Kid, which is kind of a guide to, like, tailoring RPGs to kids.
Yeah.
Like
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really neat.
Yeah, I imagine that you could, like, my kid is into Pokemon now, and you're like, I can make a little Pokemon RPG mm-hmm. based around that, or whatever their thing is.
Under the Autumn Strangely? I don't know what that was. It just looked cool.
I do know what that is. Oh. It is directly inspired by Over the Garden Wall. It's, like, got sort of, like, that sort of quirky, melancholy, autumnal vibe. Like, if you've seen Over the Garden Wall, it is directly based on that. And I know that has a big cult fandom, so... October is around the corner, so I feel like it's time.
A game called Grackle Teeth by former Austin native Mark Major. Who you might also...
Carried off by the Grackles, though, I believe.
Carried off by the Grackles, correct. Yeah. Two games, Miru and Miru 2... which are analog adventure game and analog horror game. Sort of like
Zork
kind of thing. I think it's kind of like that kind of vibe.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
My Mother's Kitchen, which is, I think, a solo game.
I believe it is.
There's a whole bunch of stuff, but that's a lot of the new ones.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, like, many, many restocks. Yep. Some older games that are still new to us.
Yep.
But if you need
a copy of your 1,000-year-old vampire, right? Have it back in stock.
If you were to walk over there, you would find that nearly every game that was up there of like 100 games that we have faced out is now switched out with something else. So it's like a totally new experience. Yep. You should dive in.
Yeah, we expanded that section and it's one of our big growing sections. Yep. So come check out the indie RPGs. We got new expansions for Marvel United. That's the co-op with the mini co-op game with little chibi minis.
Yep.
We got the Multiverse Core Box, which has like Peggy Carter as Captain America, that kind of thing, as well as boxes for Civil War, Maximum Carnage, World War Hulk.
Yeah. Nice.
We got a little cool wallet size game called Western Legends Showdown.
Yes. And you say wallet sized, it literally looks like a wallet.
It looks like a wallet. Yes. Yeah. There's another one too, I forgot the name of it, but it's also a little wallet game.
Oh, right.
Nine something.
Yeah.
But we got a ton of little party games too to close this out. Power Hungry Pets, Hurry Up Chicken Butt, which comes with a cute little chicken popper thing. Skip Leg Day, which comes in a little smoothie cup.
Hurry Up Chicken Butt, that makes sense. I heard a kid in the store the other day saying that phrase over and over, and I was like, is that what the kids are saying now?
Yes, Dave, that's what the kids are saying, Hurry Up Chicken Butt. Best Worst Ice Cream, which, Dave, you talked about this one.
What did I say about this? Oh, it's like gross-out flavors. Yeah, yeah. It's almost like, you know, like Garbage Pail Kids flavors.
Yeah. And then you have to pick which is the least worst.
Yes, it sounded fun. It's like a good game for younger kids.
A game called My Parents Might Be Martians, which I'm going to guess is a hidden or one of those hidden
social
role
deduction
games.
Social
deduction games. And a new one from the Oatmeal People. Let's hit each other with fake swords. And if you can't figure out what that game is, I don't know what to tell you.
Which I've heard is fun from our staffer Jeanette. She played it and had a good time.
That's funny. All right, let's
two were injured.
Let's talk about comics for this week and last week. Yeah. Again, there's gonna be a lot of stuff. The big book for this week is Wolverine Revenge number one.
This is like a pretty big all-star team. So, yeah, Jonathan Hickman, who is what would Hickman be best known for?
X-Men.
Did he just finished doing?
Right, he
Ultimate
did the
Spider-Man right now.
Krakoa era. Oh, Ultimate Spider-Man is like easily his biggest thing right now, and like Marvel's biggest story at the moment. He did East of West, right, and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, he's basically been like a driving force for comics for the past like 10 years.
Yep. And then you've got Greg Capullo on art. People know Greg Capullo from starting out as, like, he took over from McFarlane on Spawn. He did Batman with all of the Scott Snyder run. Haunt and all with Robert Kirkman. And so you got an all-star team. This is, to me, slightly analogous to, like, Old Man Logan. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be big like that.
I agree.
Is kind of an out-of-continuity thing as well.
For sure.
There's been like a big sort of disaster related to Asteroid M. I don't want to like say too much.
Yeah.
But there's some other heroes that'll show in it, Cap, Winter Soldier, some other interesting people in there.
A cast of villains.
There's an interesting cast of villains, and the interesting thing about this is it is also a Red Band comic as well.
There's a regular version and then there's a Red Band.
Yeah, but that means you could pick up the Red Band one, and probably when Wolverine slashes a dinosaur early on, you're probably going to see its intestines.
Probably.
That's my surmise. I have not seen it, though. So if you buy one of those, open it for us and show us the inside of the dino.
I really want them to have one of like a squib or something that when person
a blood bag that just pops on you.
Nick, don't. Why? No. Why would you put that in the world?
But they won't do it in here. They'll do it in their car and it'll be funny.
Yeah, you think that.
You are the Red Band. But anyway, yes, that's Wolverine Revenge.
Yeah.
We also got Predator versus Black Panther number one.
Yep.
Following up on Predator versus Wolverine.
Yeah, this is a fun idea that I kind of liked the setup they do with the Predators.
There's a slightly Game of Thrones, there's power struggle between two brothers on, like, the Predator planet.
Yep.
One of whom is, like has a handicap sort of thing. He's got an injured leg, and that has, like, a cybernetic leg, and he's kind of the one that gets dumped on, basically, by the family,
But their father has a glorious weapon that he
got. It's a vibranium spear.
Made of vibranium, and it's kind of see how they mesh Black Panther and Predator together.
And I believe the injured one, the handicapped one, is like kind of like wanting to get a power base, and so he's coming to Wakanda for his own vibranium.
He wants a suit of armor made of vibranium.
Yeah, it's a cool premise.
It is. It's a fun idea.
We've got two parts of Venom War this week, two one-shots, Venom War Carnage and Venom War Venomous. For those who don't know, Venomous is Black Widow with the symbiote.
Yep.
And then over at DC, we've got Jenny Sparks, number one.
Right, she was originally like in like Stormwatch and the Authority and stuff.
The Authority is where she first popped up.
Yep.
Right, from this was Warren Ellis's big stuff in the late 90s.
Yep.
But of course, those characters would come over to sometimes more, sometimes less easily mix with the DC universe.
More often than not, you'll see Grifter. But you probably won't see
Midnighter and Apollo pretty notable.
Probably not as much the Engineer, although she's going to be in the Superman movie apparently.
It's true.
So.
How weird.
So,
it is weird.
But Jenny Sparks is, what do they call them, Millennium Children?
She was born in 1900 and she will die at 2000. But apparently,
that didn't quite work.
Apparently
didn't,
now not.
Didn't take.
She was reborn as like probably some new spirit of the 21st century or something.
Sure.
But anyway, the big thing is that this is Tom King doing it. It's a, I don't know, 5 or 6 issue miniseries.
Yep.
She is, as a British person, she gets to be one of the few other characters, along with Constantine, yeah, who gets to smoke cigarettes.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Beast Boy tried it once, and they had him strangled.
Right, yeah, because he's not British.
Yeah.
Only British people can speak cigarettes. Only British people can smoke cigarettes, and they're the only ones who can say certain words.
I don't know this artist.
Is it the C word?
Jeff Spokes, but he is quite good.
Pretty good.
Kind of fits in with the...
Did we mention this is Tom King?
I did.
Dave did.
Yeah, Tom King has a history of working with these pretty good artists, like really good artists.
Yep.
But they basically put Jenny Sparks in the... I don't want to say like
the boys
category, basically the a person who can keep the superheroes in line, but
that,
she has
that
like
is
a
part of the pitch though.
But she has like a deal with Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman to sort of be this person, which I thought was kind of weird, but I was like, sure.
Well, that's because occasionally Superman likes to bum a smoke off of her. he's a reporter, and behind the scenes, he does a little bit of drinking, a little bit of smoking.
He's obviously like, give me that cigarette, you.
Work when you say it, Clark. Hey, Lois, guess what I learned today?
Guess what word I learned from Jenny Sparks? Oh, God, Clark, no. Well, let me tell you, down on the planet, there are a whole bunch of them down at Daily Planet.
Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, is about to have somebody, a guest on his couch.
He's not pal anymore. He uses a different word now.
All right, moving on.
That's Jenny Sparks, though.
Moving on, we've got an image book called Standstill. Written and colored by Lee Lawford, just a colorist going to writing.
Moving to writing, yeah.
With art by, oh man, who's the artist on this? It is
really good. Andrew Robinson.
It is gorgeous. It's a beautiful book. But the basic concept is there's a guy who stole a sort of time freezing prototype, so he can freeze time for as long as he wants, and he is going around righting wrongs in a very bloody way. And there seems to be a sort of disgraced, maybe CIA agent or something, who's looking for him.
I think, I understand that the nerdy creator of the invention may be, like, have to get involved in trying to stop
this. Oh, so maybe it's the nerdy creator of the invention.
I think that's it.
Okay.
And it seems a little bit like this guy is kind of doing... He's not... I thought at first when I read the description that he was just going to be like, oh, I'm just being like a crazy man, I'm just partying or whatever. But no, he's kind of like righting wrongs
but
in a really messed up way.
Messed up way, yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it is... I think I would say... I didn't read the entire thing, but I started to read it, and I was like, this is definitely better than I expected.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed this first issue, and the art is stunning.
It has a sort of raunchy, like slightly Pulp Fiction-esque...
Garth Ennis-y a little bit?
Yeah, Garth Ennis-y a little bit. Like, It's pretty raw and darkly funny.
It's going to be an 8-issue miniseries. So
yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to reading this. I didn't get a chance.
A new Dark Horse mini called Patra from James Robinson of Starman and some other things.
Yep.
Artist Scott Collins, friend of the store, who designed our original mascot. Yep.
It has to do, and I believe it's going to, in subsequent issues, embrace even more slasher motifs.
Yeah.
Like, not just a serial killer, but specifically, like, movie-style slashers. And a weird connection to a little girl with amnesia who has some, you know, like, almost like supernatural tie-in to this guy who's going around killing people. And she's trying to figure it out. And I think it's meant to be kind of, you know, a little bit of debaucherous fun.
Yeah. All right. Let's divert to last week's number ones. There's a lot of them. The new X launch is X Factor. Did we not have an X launch this week?
No, this was an off week.
Okay. So X-Factor is their government team. It is written by Mark Russell, who you will probably know for doing some subversive. He's the guy to do a government team thing.
He did Flintstones and
yeah. This team is a weird. It's feral. Havoc, Angel, Pyro, and Frenzy. It's a very strange team.
Well, that's not the team it starts with.
That's not the team it starts with, but...
There's some twists and turns that occur in this first issue. But, like, this, at least conceptually, it has its roots in, like, Ecstatics.
Yeah.
Back in the day, if you read that, the one, the team with Dupe on it, that was, like, their Hollywood, you know, publicity machine.
Yeah.
And this has the, some of those same satirical elements, but they are also a government team.
Mm-hmm.
There's like just there's an interesting notion in there of like, oh, I don't know. At some point, they like one of their missions is a flop, and their like PR flack dude is like, he's like, this is actually not a problem for us. He's like a failed mission gives you a story arc, you know, it gives you a narrative for the audience to kind of root for.
Well, they've kind of also created a character that is very a la Maxwell Lord.
In a lot of ways.
Kind of like classic 80s Maxwell Lord. Where he's not like not the new full evil Maxwell Lord.
Just like a maybe passably decent Gordon Gekko.
Yeah, this guy is hungry for ratings and money. That's really
and so Havoc and those and the other sort of notable like leader types in there kind of having to like navigate this difficult course. Yep. So.
Spider-Man has a new anthology series, you know, the Black, White, and Red. This is Black Suit and Blood. All stories when Spidey was wearing the black suit.
It is indeed all black suit Spidey.
Yep.
But not Venom.
Nope.
But black suit.
But it includes a story by J. Michael Straczynski and J.M. DeMatteis, two of the better Spider-Man writers.
So. And J. Jack Kirby.
And also J. Dustin Nguyen and J. Alyssa Wong.
that's the format.
He's just killing people left and right in this black suit and blood.
There's also Spider Society. This is sort of the... I guess it's not an ongoing, it's another miniseries, but basically the this is the next iteration of the Spider-Verse. Madame Web is pulling together a team that has, like, Aranya and Spider-Man 2099 and a couple other weird, like, Web Weaver and some of those characters.
I think I also saw, like, Spider-Woman on her motorcycle.
Yep.
That's the movie
version of Spider-Woman.
Yep.
Along with, like, Spider-Gwen and some old favorites. And they are dealing now with a Sinister Society, like the... The Sinister Six from various multiverses.
Oh, okay. That's kind of fun.
A sequel to DC vs. Vampires. This is DC vs. Vampires World War V. It is a civil war between the vampires that have basically taken over the Earth.
Yep. And I see that at this point, like, Batgirl is, like, the
Vampire Queen, Barbara Gordon, which is
kind of fun. And I think Green Arrow is sort of the resistance leader, which there's some fun stuff in these.
Yeah, it's interesting. There is, I don't know if y'all know this, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands.
I know what it's from now, but I didn't know what it was.
It's a Borderlands thing, but there was actually a standalone game. She plays tournaments called From Bunkers and Badasses. So basically, it's
the D&D of the Borderlands world.
The D&D of the Borderlands world, yes.
That's kind
of
cool.
And it's goofy, and I guess it's a standalone game of it. But this is her running a D&D game for psychopaths from the Borderlands world.
Okay.
Yep.
Based on what I have heard, it is probably already better than the Borderlands movie.
I've heard that
that's
too.
That's a low bar.
You
the
know,
lowest of bars.
But without even having read it, I'm going to guess that that's the case.
I saw that it was at 10%.
All right, It's rocking out.
They're definitely worse.
It's rallying. It's rallying.
It was at zero.
Who knows? Next week, 12.
10% is rallying?
Holding it.
From 0% it is.
holding at not dipping below 9, maybe, you know, what? Who knows what it could achieve?
It's fair, okay. A book from Ahoy Comic called Babs, which is Garth Ennis and Jason Burroughs doing their sort of take on Red Sonja, essentially.
Yeah, it is a raucous fantasy in the tradition of, I would say, Rat Queens.
Yeah.
But also Garth Ennis's way of sort of slyly commenting on and... When I say slyly, I mean like punching in the balls. Kind of the gatekeeping side of fandom. There is a motif in this. Now it is also all the kind of usual messed up Garth Ennis humor that you would expect too. But that is one of the thematics in it. So it's kind of fun because I think like the Red Sonja of this world is kind of like the descendant of various, you know, like a previous, like a Conan type warrior.
Yeah.
And so there's some of these, some assholes who are like, early on, they're like, well, he was the real deal, and you're just kind of like, basically, if they could say woke, they would. And I'm pretty sure she probably punches him in the balls and worse. But
sure.
Anyway, if you've been needing some Garth Ennis insanity in your life, Babs.
It's really good artwork by Jason Burroughs.
Yeah.
That.
Yep.
We've got, there's a weird resumption. It's not exactly pulp. But we had like
kind
a couple weeks ago
classic
cartoons,
adventure,
Thundercats, and
Hanna-Barbera,
all that stuff. So Johnny Quest is back. Johnny Quest had a Free Comic Book Day issue, which I think we all really liked.
And this takes up exactly, like,
right after. Right from it, yep.
Yep.
Written by Joe Casey, art by Sebastian Perez, and the art is stunning. This is, like, Chris Samnee, who's the other guy that we liked? Evan Shaner, kind of.
Yeah, along those lines. Shockingly good. Shockingly good.
And the premise is cool. It involves time travel.
Yeah. Yeah, something that, you know, Johnny Quest does a lot of globe-hopping stuff. There's sort of little supernatural and science fiction elements at times. Yep. I don't think I had seen a time travel story
but it
before.
Made sense. It fit. It worked. I really enjoyed this. Some great action, good character stuff. I'm not, like, a gigantic Johnny Quest fan, but
I don't think any of
us
are, like, super devoted to it, but everybody, I think everybody should like Johnny Quest.
Yeah. Especially watch the intro.
Yes, go watch the intro if you haven't seen it. Yep. It's, you know, that is a dope-ass late 60s, I think, early 70s intro.
But I will say, Casey, I felt, got the characters. They felt like the characters I remember from the cartoon.
I agree.
100%. And then Defenders of the Earth, similar vibes. This is, the same people?
It was based on a cartoon in the 80s that had, like, the almost like before League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or anything like that. It kind of pulled together some properties. It was like Mandrake the Magician, the Phantom, you know, the purple suit Phantom, and Flash Gordon.
Yep.
And I think maybe the one original character whose name is, I forget.
Guy with Whip.
It's not the most memorable.
And this is from what I understand a direct continuation of the cartoon. I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I think that, like, say, like the Power Rangers comic and stuff like that, they approach it a little bit with a little bit more gravity and a little bit more edge than they used to, while not, like, veering into, like, Flash Gordon is going to torture a man. But what if he did? If you kind of like that Flash Gordon pulp adventure vibe and want to see a an early League of Extraordinary Gentlemen type thing version of it. There you go.
The only one I'm super familiar of is with the Phantom.
Slam Evil.
So I will note, there is in the back of this an ad for the Phantom PS5 game that's coming. So if you want to Slam Evil in high-def video games...
Oh, you know what? Phantom video game sounds cool.
I'd be all about that, yeah.
David, I will not play it. We don't have PS5s.
I hope it doesn't suck, because I'd hate to miss out on a game that doesn't suck.
Yeah, you want to miss your chance to Slam Evil.
Yes.
I'm assuming it's going to be like the Watchmen beat 'em up.
For people who don't know, the slogan for the kind of blinking you'd miss it in the 90s Phantom movie was, in fact, Slam Evil.
Are you talking about the Phantom movie starring Billy Zane?
I mean, Billy Zane's not nobody.
No.
He's not exactly somebody, but he's not nobody.
I thought the Phantom was fine. I was more of the Shadow. I liked that movie.
Well, so do you know that I've never seen the Phantom?
Oh, have you not?
No, I didn't. I've never slammed Evil.
Why have you not slammed Evil?
I was more of a Shadow guy as well. That had Alec Baldwin and whoever the lady was.
Catherine Zeta-Jones. Lara Flynn Boyle. Yes, you're right.
Was it?
No. It had...
Was it not
Catherine? I thought it might have been.
No, what is her
name? All I know is that Catherine Zeta-Jones and Billy Zane made the Phantom pop, so...
Oh, really? So that was an early Catherine Zeta-Jones role?
That's her first.
Okay.
Penelope Ann Miller,
okay. You know, there was a little resurgence in the, like, late 80s, or, like, I guess early 90s. So you had the Rocketeer, Shadow, and Phantom... And I think, you know, you could almost, like, talk about The Crow as, like, a modern version of something like that. There was, like, pulp stuff, because they couldn't do full superheroes, really, FX-wise, it made sense that they embraced the pulps a little bit.
Why has no one made a Doc Savage movie?
I mean, they've been trying forever. The Rock is supposed to be in it, and Shane Black is supposed to be doing it, but they cannot make it happen.
It's so weird. I feel like that's an idea that should work.
Yeah. Just somewhere out there, somebody is screaming, there is a movie that was made in the 70s. If you've never seen it. It is played rather campily, kind of like the Batman 60s show.
Okay.
Not quite as campy as that, but not too far from it.
Bam and Pow's?
No. But it does have, like, the full team with, like, Monk and all the rest. All right. And I semi-recommend it. It's kind of fun to watch. His theme is based on marches from John Philip Sousa. So there is big, like, boom, 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 kind of, you know, music to it. And some good scenes. It's very hokey. He's not, you're like, well, that dude is not exactly jacked the way Doc Savage is. But he gets his shirt torn like Doc Savage would.
All right.
So, But anyway, yeah, it is clear. It's crazy that they haven't figured out a way to do it. And by the way, I would build it on an unknown. Get a cool unknown, kind of like, or the dude who played Reacher or something like that.
Yeah, I don't want The Rock to do it, but he's wanting to.
Make your Santa Christmas movies and your fast movies.
Yeah, go make your Fast and Furious. Go be Black Adam again. I don't care.
The Rock
whatever.
Like 60 now. Get somebody who's merely
he'd still kill us all.
He can't. I dare him to kill us.
Yeah, he couldn't do it. You know why he won't kill us? Because he's kind of trying for a political career in the next few years. He can only maim us.
And then The Rock bursts through the wall like the Kool-Aid Man. Oh yeah! Snapped us all like twigs.
Suplexed. Yep.
I'm like, oh, that's a pretty cool Doc Savage costume. Ah! There we go. Oh god.
All right. That takes care of first issues. Worth mentioning, Destro number 3 is this week, as is G.I. Joe Real American number 309.
We get our first glimpse at a brand new character for the Image G.I. Joe universe.
Indeed. Ultimate Spider-Man number 8, which is really good, introduces some of the Spidey villains in a really interesting way.
It was a great issue.
The penultimate, Tom Taylor Nightwing number 117, which I really, really liked.
Yep.
And then a lot of good number 2s this week. We got Phoenix number 2, which is her teaming up with her father-in-law, Corsair.
Yep.
We got Dark Knights of Steel All Winter number 2, which explores why the book is mostly in black and white and why one character's in color.
There is an actual in-story reason for it.
This is a
cool
issue.
Has some awesome action and story.
Nick,
like,
Randy, is that kid who I think it might be?
Yes.
Yeah.
The last name
the
gives
name.
It away.
Oh, well, yeah. The first name.
Oh, the first name. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Also has a really, really cool backup story.
Yeah, the backup story is good, too. Yeah, this is spectacularly good. I'm really enjoying
it. It's still very much Deathstroke-oriented, right?
Yeah.
He's like the character.
Yeah, it's his story.
Almost in the same way that the second... what's the DC Zombies thing? Dead...
Taylor's DC Zombies.
Oh, Deceased.
Deceased. In the same way that the second one that came out for that was like the villain side, this is a villain-centric version of his fantasy world.
Namor number 2, Jason Aaron doing a lot of world building here. Really pretty art too by Davidson.
And you say world building, it's cool Atlantis stuff, right?
Yep, cool Atlantis stuff. He's definitely fleshing out what Atlantis in the Marvel Universe is, which nobody's really done much with.
Yeah, it seems like nothing ever seems to stick, and perhaps his will.
On the cover, it looks like a small child is kicking.
Yes, it's not a small child. I don't know why they did that. It's not. That cover's not great for her. That's like a weird thing.
I'm assuming it's like the Dina Marina or something.
No, that's like that's a new character introduced, but she is like his age. It's very weird. But anyway, I really like that. I like the character was introduced. Second issue of Daredevil: One Without Fear sees Elektra Daredevil facing off with the new Punisher.
Yep.
There's a second issue of Epitaphs from the Abyss, which is EC Comics' new horror anthology. The EC Comics have been doing really well for us.
Yeah.
Both the horror and sci-fi.
And then I also I read Get Fury number 4, which I've been kind of enjoying that one as well.
Just classic Garth Ennis.
Yeah, classic Garth Ennis.
Although, just flipping through it, I was like, this is, you know, the side of Garth Ennis that is the talky, plotty side. Always still interesting to see, but it is not like just total violent mayhem. He will sometimes set you up for a thoughtful issue.
There was also the second issue of Paranoid Gardens.
Oh, right, yeah.
That's the one from...
Gerard Way.
Gerard Way.
My Chemical Romance.
He's semi-famous. Yep.
yes, the second issue of Witchblade.
That's right.
And then there was also, which I didn't get a chance to read, but I kind of want to, because it's a standalone Miles Morales Spider-Man annual that stars Storm and Bloodline, which I thought was kind of a fun...
Oh, yeah.
Him going to, I want to say, Puerto Rico or something.
Okay.
He's going on vacation, but yeah, he runs across some stuff. Because, you know, he's a vampire.
He's a vampire now.
Yeah. But yeah, that's all I had to add.
Dave, you got a graphic novel there I should mention.
Yeah, this is... I don't know much about it. It's called Book of Evil, but it has, like, a huge creative team. Scott Snyder, you know, best known for, like, I don't know, 5 years on Batman and a lot of horror graphic novels and stuff like that. And Jock, the artist who may be best known to us, at least, for Green Arrow Year One... But he's been working with, Distillery lately and doing stuff for them. And this is, like, more of, like, an illustrated prose than it is full comic.
Well, this is them. They worked on a book, Witches, or Witches, or however you want to
say it. It's Witches, I'm sure.
I'm sure it is. But, and yeah, they're reteaming to do
this. I forgot that was the team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading from the back. Imagine that from tomorrow morning onward, nearly every baby born into this world is a future psychopath. There is no answer as to why this is happening. Is this human evolution? Devolution? An incurable virus of some kind? Regardless, just like that, the new normal is psychopathy. 50 years later, four friends must set off on a journey that will take them down the roads and rivers of the transformed America in hopes of finding a place where goodness still lives. sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And I said psychopathy without stumbling over it. So
very well done. Very well done.
Thank you.
All right. That's comics. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some trailers and stuff. All right, so last week was D23, and they released some trailers.
What is D23?
It's basically Disney.
It's just the expo, yeah.
Okay.
But it's not just sure. Don't like fans and people go to that too?
They do. But it's basically a hype machine for whatever Disney is producing.
I don't know if you guys have heard of this little upstart company, Disney, but they make a lot of shit.
They do.
They own 90% of pop culture.
Yeah,
I'm on the payroll now.
Uh huh.
And they want to have a talk to
me. I mean, if they want to give me a paycheck, I'll be on the payroll. I mean, I would.
Not me. I'm fiercely independent. I can't stand this corporate garbage like the MCU.
I mean, that's what a lot of people are saying now.
I know that's true. All right. So first of all, let's talk about the one that's not related to that, which is the Tomb Raider: Legend of Lara Croft animated series on Netflix coming out in October.
Yeah.
That was a very generic trailer.
It was generic, and it was really kind of choppy. It was just kind of a lot of little quick scenes strung together.
She's doing Tomb Raider-y stuff. She's throwing grappling hooks. She's running and stuff. You know, I thought there was a very brief snippet in there that looked pretty cool to me, where it looks like a tidal wave is hitting like a small, like it looked like, I don't know, town in like Italy or something like that.
Yeah.
She's like on a motorcycle and racing along on the edge of the waterfront as like water is smashing through shops and stuff behind her. And I was like, that looks cool. But, like, you know, something to do with her father, something to do with her heritage.
All the things we've kind of seen before in some way or the other.
I don't expect a Castlevania level win, because that was kind of an exceptional one with notable writing.
Yeah.
But can they capture the cool action adventure part of it?
I always root for a Tomb Raider thing. I think I've watched every iteration.
I have a question for you, Nick.
Sure.
Has any of them been good?
There have been good games.
I'm still a weird fan of the Angelina Jolie stuff.
I did not like those movies.
I thought that was the closest to what the original video games were.
It's in that ballpark for sure. Like, I think that they're lesser outings, but that they're pretty watchable. And what those got about it, and the things that has changed a little about Lara Croft, is she has the kind of aristocratic thing, but also she's like snarky and kind of super self-confident.
Yes.
The newer games, which are really good.
She's younger,
and it's more survivalist.
Right.
Like she gets knocked around.
That was the basis for the Alicia Vikander one, which was really bad.
Yeah.
It was not good.
This maybe felt like a little closer to the class. Well, I mean, visually, she looked like the younger one.
Yeah, visually.
So I guess it is still like the slightly younger.
But it definitely had sort of the kind of British aristocracy kind of a little bit
vibe
of the original. So I'm rooting for it. I would like it to be good.
But nothing, like, super notable. The animation looked solid.
Yeah, it looked solid, but it didn't look, like, notable.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the Disney trailers.
Okay.
They announced a bunch of sequels. Toy Story 5.
Yeah.
Something else.
Well, that's what Bob Iger said. He was like, let's focus on sequels and, like, known things.
I don't like this at all.
I mean, some of the kind of story ideas for, like, Toy Story 5 was about the toys trying to get their kid away from an iPad. As a log line, sounds interesting, at least. And I know they're going to treat Toy Story with a little respect.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm certainly, as a comics fan, I should not be like, there's no end of life on things. I'm reading 70-year-old characters.
Yes.
But Toy Story had a good ending. Like, it's had, like, three good endings. And I feel like you're pushing your luck at this point. Like, stop making it. You're going to ruin the whole thing.
Well, there's lots to say about kids and their interests in toys and things.
I guess. And also, I liked Inside Out 2.
I haven't watched it yet.
I don't know that I think they needed to make it, but I'm like, it was a good sequel. So I'm not against sequels, but I'm a little wary of this whole thing. And that leads to the trailer we watched, which is Moana 2.
Yeah.
Which I think Dave, you and I are kind of on the same page here. It looks a little greatest hitsy.
Yeah. You know, it looks like Moana did her thing in the first one, and I don't actually remember what it was she did. She restored life to the island?
She saved the ocean goddess.
Yeah.
Basically, okay. Put her back together.
Saved her, what was the down? What was it doing, though? Wasn't it hurting her island, the island that her people lived on?
I think it was hurting the world.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's like kind of some sort of environmental catastrophe.
But it was also her finding herself. This one, she is like a...
She's been out and adventuring.
She is the Wayfinder, what basically her father didn't want her to be, but became anyways.
Yep.
Now she's kind of in her heyday. She is trying to basically unite the tribes of the world, which I think is a fine story idea.
Yep. Have we seen any of the other tribes out there?
No.
Unless you consider like the little sort of pygmy monster things. Like, are they considered one of them?
I don't think so. I think they're just like one of those monster things you run across.
But they are in this.
Yeah.
All the favorites are in it. She has to ask Maui to come back with her.
Yeah. It looks like a few people from her tribe go with her, which I thought was an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Not only do you get Hey again, it is greatest hitsy, but there's some new stuff here.
That is often how first trailers go.
Yeah.
This is gonna
do gangbusters.
You think?
Yeah. I think he's right.
Like, Moana was big, and I think Moana deserved it. It's really good.
Yep.
I think it's one of their best ones in recent years.
We'll see what they do in regards to the music. I don't know if Lin-Manuel Miranda is gonna come back.
He was a big part of what was.
What
was awesome about the first one.
So we'll see on that front. But I don't know. I will definitely be seeing this. I have a fondness for Moana.
I have a fondness for Moana, but I don't know for sure that I'll see it. I'll kind of like see what people are saying.
I think I'm pretty unlikely to see this.
Randy's going to see it.
I don't want a Moana 2. I don't want a Moana.
Are you going to want an Incredibles 3?
I don't want Incredibles 3 either. Incredibles 2 is super disappointing.
Not super disappointing.
I've rewatched it. It's not bad.
Incredibles 2 is pretty decent.
It's decent.
Okay. Really? Okay. All
right.
And then
when I saw it, I was very disappointed.
They also announced the live-action Lilo and Stitch, which is weird.
That live-action live-action Stitch looks creepy to me.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was actually pretty well done. It looks fine.
So there's images of it, or
yeah,
there's like they did like a video, quick teaser trailer of him like bursting out of the title.
Oh, I guess I need to see that.
Yeah.
He's fine. He looks like Stitch.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I really like Lilo and Stitch. I even like the sequel movies and the TV show they did.
The TV show is really good.
I don't really want a live action version. I also don't want live action movies. Stop making these. I need to talk to Bob Iger. Get Iger on the phone for me.
But Disney likes to make money.
Turning this entire thing in the wrong direction.
And these children, they need content. And
yes, but you know what else we need? More Marvel TV shows, and he's doing less of that.
That's not for kids.
Oh, that's fair. But I'm not a child, Nick. I understand where you'd be confused, because I do want what I want and want it now.
Yes.
But I'm not a fan of this Disney, and I would like the old Disney back before Bob Iger had it.
There's also the Snow White.
The old Disney before it got woke. I hear what you're saying, Randy. I hear what you're saying.
There's also the live-action Snow White that there is a trailer, but we didn't watch it because it's Snow White. Because
who cares?
It's Rachel Zegler.
And it's a live-action remake. I like the trailer for it.
I didn't get a chance to watch it.
I feel like there was something in it that I was like, oh, that's interesting. They're expanding on that.
Well, it's Rachel Zegler and it's Gal Gadot, right?
Yeah.
I think that's right.
That's correct.
He's playing the evil queen.
Yep.
You know what the weirdest thing about it, and I don't know if this was just a visual thing, maybe it's even in the original or something, but there's a bit where she's out in the forest and like she's little forest animals are coming up to her like you do.
Yeah.
And one of them is like, I was like, that appears to be actual Bambi. I don't know if it's just like a fun inside thing or if there's actually anything to that, but
I'm going to tell you guys something. I don't really like Snow White. Never have.
Really?
Oh, well, it's like, it's famously visual, but yeah, but it could use some oomph.
I understand it's like historical prominence.
Right. But you're like, Snow White is one of the weakest heroines they have. And
I'd rather watch Sleeping Beauty any day.
And the only song in it is Hi Ho.
I don't like the dwarfs. They're weird.
What? I think you do glimpse the live action dwarfs, and they may look a little weird too. But that may just be your own hatred of little people. I remember thinking, if you're just like, if the live action just instantly repulses you, this ain't gonna change your mind. But
correct.
I thought it looked halfway decent. I never saw that one, yeah. So yes.
Lion King was awful.
Lion King was awful.
Yeah, that was
and it
John
was by
Favreau,
the guy, it was by Favreau,
right?
Who did, yeah, like, so much good stuff. And
he even did one of the other ones that was pretty good, Jungle Book.
Yeah.
Jungle Book took a lot of liberties, Lion King, from what I understand, was slavish and lame.
Yeah.
Definitely was lame.
Okay, let's talk about the next Star Wars show that's going to do one season and then get canceled without any answers.
I mean, I think we might know the answers on this, which is, it does seem odd.
It does seem odd.
It is like a, similar, like, I think the quick log line will be Star Wars Goonies.
Yeah.
If you are nerdy enough to know what Star Trek Prodigy is, or to have heard us talking about it, where the kids, a bunch of kids in a Star Trek land get a ship.
Yep.
This looks like it's going to be a little bit like that, too.
Yep.
And
it is called Skeleton Crew.
Right. That's a cool name, by the way.
It's a cool name. But it starts in this weird, like, we've never seen suburbs in Star Wars.
And it actually looks like, if you didn't,
only like six planets in all of, like, Star Wars.
I mean, they've shown hundreds of planets at this point. They just, you know, they have a Star Warsy look. There's always droids and stuff roaming about them and land speeders and things.
There could be a utopian, like,
but this one, like, suburban. Really quirkily looks, it looks like Steven Spielberg's suburbs.
Yeah.
Like, they really wanted to evoke that.
Yeah, it's
there's
weird.
There's, like, almost like there's cars going by, only you're like, okay, they are hovering, but they kind of look like cars from the 80s. There's somebody, like, mowing a lawn, and you're like, oh, I guess that's, like, a droid lawnmower or something, but it is odd to me how much they chose to visually model it on that.
Yeah, and
I think it should be a movie, not a miniseries, is it?
I agree, it's a miniseries.
And go ahead and do the Goonies thing, but also one of the things that people liked about, say, Goonies is kind of raunchy, you know? It was like it was a movie that felt a little bit more like it was for like a 12 or 13 year old than for like an 8 year old.
Yeah.
And this is a little 8 year old Z. Yeah, these Muppets are a little young.
The premise of it and the when I was hearing the logline, I was hearing the promise of it and hearing, like, oh, Star Trek Prodigy but Star Wars, I'm like, that all sounds cool. When I saw the trailer, it killed a lot of my enthusiasm. I don't think this is a very strong trailer.
It's not a strong trailer. Nick?
I'm tired of being contrarian because I thought it looked good.
Nick, you're the only person here on positivity. Dave and I are just trashing everything.
I like Jude Law. I kind of like the idea.
Who is Jude Law in this?
He plays a Jedi.
He's a Jedi.
Basically, the kids find a ship on their home planet, and then I think Jude Law is on it, and he is trying to escape something and drags the kids along.
And so he will, like, if this were Prodigy, he will be in the Janeway role?
Yeah, yeah.
Except that it seems like he's more not, like, so much an authority figure, maybe like a Jedi on the run or something.
I would imagine so. I forget where this actually takes place in the timeline.
I don't know either,
The planet Suburb 5.
No, I'm talking about in, like, the actual timeline
right.
of Star Wars.
Where,
like,
where are the Jedi? Are
I would assume this is happening at the same time as, like, Mandalorian or something, in that era.
They need all the Jedis to help fight the Clone Wars, and this guy is off having chasing One-Eyed Willy's treasure.
I love the Goonies.
That was the name of the character. I didn't make it up. Only the space One-Eyed Willy now.
None of that is good. One-Eyed Willy is not. No.
That was in Goonies. Yeah. It was always a messed up reference.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is messed up.
But by the way, as a kid, I didn't actually even get it.
Space One-Eyed Willy.
I just took it at face value. It was a slightly silly sounding name. I knew that, but I did not know what they were kind of messing around
with. I think if kids watch the Goonies today, I don't know if they'd really be interested into it.
I think they'd be, like, shocked at, like, weird sex jokes and stuff like that.
That's true.
The last trailer is Saturday Night. This is kind of a biopic, a little bit.
Yeah.
It's about basically the first show of Saturday Night Live.
Which kind of looks like it was a little chaotic.
Right, like near disaster. Lorne Michaels trying to sort of herd cats.
Yeah.
And
the casting was amazing on this.
Yeah, you get a lot of, like, people that seem to really capture the look and vibe of Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, John Belushi,
Gil Radner,
and all the original
Garrett
SNL
Morris,
players.
Yeah,
Garrett Morris.
And
George Carlin?
Mm-hmm. Was he the host?
Jim Henson, too.
Jim Henson. Great bit.
Jim Henson has a bit where he's like, it looks like he's talking to, like, one of the producers, or maybe it's even what's his name, and he's saying that they hung, like, Big Bird from, like, some upper floor or something. But of course, everybody knows that Jim Henson, back in the day, he imagined doing raunchier stuff with the Muppets.
Yeah.
So, like, that was not completely out of.
But this is Jason Reitman, who's directed a lot of movies I really like. Did he do the last Ghostbusters?
He did. He did the last two.
Before that, he did, like,
He did a movie Up in the Air with George Clooney.
Thank You for Smoking. Was that him, or is that, am I thinking somebody else?
I believe that was not him.
Okay. He's not a Juno guy, is he?
No.
Yes, he is.
What?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
He did Juno, Up in the Air, Tully, Young Adults, Ghostbusters.
Okay, so he's someone I thought I liked.
Oh, no, he did Thank You for Smoking.
Okay, there we go. That. There it is. That's the thing he did that I liked.
It's actually a fairly broad spectrum of different types of movies.
Yeah.
And this one looks, you know, like sort of heightened reality. I thought it was a good trailer.
Yeah,
it does.
Too.
It does.
It felt like, and this is an obvious kind of comparison, but it's like an Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
It has
sure.
that kind of vibe of like them talking, bantering, walk and talks.
Yeah. And also, it looks like there was like there's this sort of like almost like a stopwatch kind of vibe to it, where you get the sense of like the pressure, you know, people are telling, somebody's telling Lorne Michaels that this is kind of a counterculture show and they want it to fail.
Yeah.
And so they're setting you up to screw up. And, you know, he's trying to figure out, he's like, he's kind of a show must go on. We just got to get through this kind of vibe. But yeah, it's.
I mean, Saturday Night Live was fairly important to my, like, growing up. I mean,
yeah, and it changed. It, like, we wouldn't have had, like, and sketch comedy as we know it probably would not exist.
So.
It would maybe be around in some form, but it would not exist as we know it without SNL. For all that every generation is like, SNL sucks now, only my generation was the best. And then you go back and look and you're like, maybe that's not true. I believe it has always had ups and downs, certainly more in some eras than others. But
yeah. What was your era? I'm curious.
80s. 80s era. You know, Dana Carvey, Church Lady.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know, I caught tail end of growing up of like Eddie Murphy's run and all of that.
You know what's weird is I think my era is an era that was like considered not the best. It was like briefly Robert Downey Jr. was on there and Billy Crystal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't remember Robert Downey Jr.
I remember
Billy
Crystal.
He was on there for like two episodes.
Oh.
But he was in the cast, I think. But like Billy Crystal and Kevin Nealon and all those guys,
Kevin Nealon crosses over
into the Dana Carvey era, I think.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
But I think that was where like. I was like maybe it was like a couple of years before that, like you and I have a similar era, but I was on a little bit before it got good, really, because like you're talking about like classic stuff, like Wayne's World and all that stuff, which was like that was when I was starting to fall off of it. It was starting to get good, and then I was losing interest.
But every generation does also like spins off into some big stuff, and like half the people in there become like Adam Sandler
or Will Ferrell.
And yeah, it becomes giant. Yeah, and sometimes they manage even like Ferrell and Tina Fey are both people who've crossed over into sort of more dramatic stuff as well.
Yeah. Yep.
So it earned its legacy, even if sometimes it does suck.
Yeah.
Nature of the live show. But anyway, good trailer.
It's a very good trailer.
Yeah. All right, I guess that will wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo
Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.